Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467369.
This is your Bomb Wednesday service. I am, as always, Senior Pastor Naima Cochran, and we have family back with us this week. We have Black Trey back with us. The last time he was here, which was, what, about a month ago now, we made a casual comment about how much the three of us all love the movie Boomerang and how we were going to do an episode just dedicated to Boomerang at some point in the future. So that is today. Thank you, Trey, for being here.
Thank you guys for having me, man. I always see y'all on the timeline, but that's always even better to talk to y'all.
No, we love having family here. Karin, you came specially suited for the occasion. I'm imagining you also have a special introduction for yourself on tonight.
You know, as always, I'm drinking cognac for Kamala once again. But you know, I have on my Marcus Graham attire for the night.
You do indeed.
The black suit jacket with no shirt under it with the gold chain.
From
the Thanksgiving scene.
Right.
So, you know, this is what he had on when he found out that, you know, Gerard, do you know your father
has a question? I feel supremely underdressed. That's first. But secondly, I appreciate your commitment and your enthusiasm. So
I sent you the picture last week. I sent you the picture.
I definitely missed that. But I had a lot going on last week. But before we get into it, let me do some housekeeping because I'll get caught up in this and forget all about it. So you guys know what it is. You're with us today on Wednesday, but Count the Dings and Bomb have a whole slew of programming for your needs, enjoyment, tastes, preferences, etc., etc., etc. So on the Count the Dings feed, we have the Dad Pod on Mondays, we have Cinephobe on Wednesdays, and we have the Friday Mailbag where your questions are answered. And Trey, do they still play voicemails on the air?
I think so.
Okay, so you might even hear yourself on air. And then on the Bomb feed, we have the OG show, Trey and the Crew on Tuesdays. We have us on Wednesdays. You're listening to us right now. On Thursdays, we have Woke Bros. And we also have Trey's Growing Up the Same. How's the show going?
The show is going great. Last week, I had DJ Dahi on. Mm-hmm. This week, we will be having Jamal Crawford from Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, very dope. Okay.
Yeah.
Very dope. So you can check that out on Thursdays as well. And then on Thursdays also, there's the Pack Your Knives feed, which is the week from the Top Chef, the latest season of Top Chef. And of course, as we always do say, if you do have extra money laying around, you want some additional content and on top of everything I just explained, you can also subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com, Count the Dings, for exclusives, extras, all that good stuff. And you can also check out our After Dark series of videos. And we would much prefer you give your money to that than whom, Karin?
That white man.
There we go. Do not give your money to that white man.
But if you do give us money, we have decided that we are sending it to Kamala Harris's campaign. And yes, we will have receipts. We will not get on the internet and email you and say, this is the most important work.
This is the most important email I ever sent you in my life.
And then not have our friends go over our books saying that we are clean and that we don't steal money. Like when Trey pointed out last time, when actually we live in apartment buildings we should not be able to afford.
Right. In gentrified Brooklyn. Brand spanking new, shiny ass, sparkling. That actually Waz pointed that out, I think. Sparkling apartment buildings. All right. So why are we doing a whole show on Boomerang? I'm so glad you asked. So even though Boomerang is almost 20 years old, it's 18 years old now. It's 18 years old. The thing is that people consider Boomerang one of the greatest black comedies of all times, but it's actually just one of the great ensemble movies of all time, period. I think it is criminally underrated, especially when you consider the star power in it. Like, I think it's one of Eddie...
It's 28 years old.
Oh, see, I'm that person who the 90s for me was 10 years ago. I'm that person.
28 years old.
Is 28 years old, which is, that makes more sense. But anyway, y'all knew what I meant. and I'm really thinking like, 1990s, 18 years ago. Anyway, I need to look this up, but I actually feel like, even though it wasn't a flop by any means, I think it's...
It was a flop.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's significantly... it wasn't a flop like Eddie Murphy's last pictures in the last decade a flop, but at the time, this was still superstar Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
This was actually towards like the end of his box office best-selling everything all the time arc. But it was definitely down the list.
When Eddie got really black and he went on a string of black classics.
Which nobody knew what to do with.
The white classics.
So the thing that's great, and we're going to get into, if you guys hear sirens in the background, sorry, it's Watchers Tights. We're going to get into the specifics about why this movie is important to each one of us. But what I want to point out just from like a cast and technical and logistical point of view is that one of the things about Boomerang that is so excellent is, first of all, the cast is like, it is the best black cast you could have put together like bar none. And I mean, even in terms of and black cast and black people working on the project. So directed by the Hudlin brothers, who also did House Party the year before Boomerang came out. You have Eddie Murphy and Lee. You have Robin Givens at the height of her Robin Givensness. You have Halle Berry at the beginning of her Halle Berryness. I think this was her second.
Straight off Strictly Business.
Straight off Strictly Business. I think this was her second movie after Strictly Business.
And Jungle Fever.
Have, with the playing a crackhead in Jungle Fever. You have David Alan Greer while In Living Color is on. You have Martin while, you know, right. I think this might have been right as Martin was starting or right as Martin was catching his. Okay, it was filmed before, but I think when it came out, right before, right as Martin was catching his stride.
This was like right, I think it was during Def Comedy because that's where he met Tisha on set.
Right.
And Tisha told the story. She was like, he told her on set, like, yo, I'm about to get a show. I'm going to come back to you.
Right. Okay, so also, I'm glad you pointed out, you got Tisha Campbell Martin. You got Layla Rashawn coming off of Harlem Nights. At the height of her Layla Rashawn-ness, you got Grace Jones. You have Eartha Kitt. You have Chris Rock while he was still on Saturday Night Live, fucking that opportunity away. I'm missing people. I'm gonna bring up more people. And then on the soundtrack
You have Flash from the Five Heartbeats.
Lady Eloise's driver.
Shouts to Flash.
It's Lonely at the Top. You have
a new album being stores in about 2 weeks.
Oh, and we have my man who played Nelson, Jeffrey Holder, as Nelson. As Nasty Nelson, which Jeffrey Holder is actually what I think even a lot of my generation knows is that because we know Jeffrey as like Apu from Annie and shit. He was actually like one of the greatest, most heralded black dancers and actors. He was, he was part of the Alvin Ailey troupe, but at any rate, was a premier dancer for Ailey, but he was a premier dancer for, if not Ailey, another prominent dance troupe, magnificent theater actor, stage actor. But just like iconic as Nelson. And that's part of the thing, right? These characters were so iconic. Shout out to my chapter, Sora Kanya, who didn't want to put the fish there because she did not want it there. But it's just like, it's just a great, great movie. And even if you watch it today, it aged really well. And then on the music side, you have L.A. and Babyface doing their first ever soundtrack, which became a thing for them. But also, like, soundtracks kind of became at least Face's thing for a minute, right? And LaFace's thing. It was so excellent. We'll get to that towards the end. It was so great because they were on set watching the movie being made so that they could channel that in real time as they put the soundtrack together. But I want to start with, let me first outline. For those who don't know what Boomerang is about, on the surface, the plot line is young black single marketing exec got whole world at his feet. He's fly. He got money. It's New York. Shit is popping. He got all the ladies. He got all the game. Finds himself in a situation where all of a sudden everything that men usually do in pursuit of women and chase of women and dogging women out, he finds himself on the receiving end of. AKA, you know, a la Boomerang, and how he navigates that and how he actually deals with basically like the first time a player falls in love and what that is and how that works. The first time a player gets played, secondly, the first time a player falls in love for real and decides to hang that up. On a deeper note, this was an all black fucking cast, you know, an all black crew. This was a company full of well-dressed, well-heeled, well-suited, well-educated, well-moneyed black executives, top to bottom.
Well-permed.
Well-permed and coiffed and oiled and shined and moisturized. Black execs, top to bottom. This was a world of black people who were just like affluent and getting it. And there was no struggle story. There was no let me go visit my mom in the projects. Not that there's anything wrong with that. We had just not had that framed for us like that at all, but still managed to be very black in its storytelling. And Eddie was even asked about that. And he was like, nobody asks, you know, all these other movies why they're all white movies. Like, I wanted to, you know, create a black experience for Boomerang. Like, that's what I did. But it's still a universal story. And I really do feel like that's the reason that Boomerang is kind of undersold, because its blackness isn't the selling point. Like, Coming to America is like kind of over the top telling of African culture meets American culture. It's a fish out of water story. And a lot of our other black movies from the 90s, like, the blackness is the point. Like, it's a hood story. It's a drug story. It's a crime story. Boomerang is just, it's a comedy. The blackness is what we love about it, but the blackness is not the selling point of it, if that makes sense. So for each of you guys, you each spoke to like how important this movie is to you, why you love it, all sorts of stuff. So can you guys, since you're our guest, Trey, can you go first? Like, what does Boomerang mean to you? When did you watch it? Why do you love it? What's your favorite thing about it? All that good stuff.
So I was a kid when it came out, so I really didn't understand it. I lived around the corner from a video store, so I would rent all the movies. My grandma never like put a filter on the movies I seen. And I loved Eddie Murphy at the time too. But what rewatching it at 20, oh man, I learned so many life lessons, whether it was just checking a woman's feet, not during
yeah,
the time
we're gonna come back to that.
After not after the time after sex or anything, but just in general, just paying attention to small detail. The way Marcus just kind of carried himself, I always say etiquette. He had a lot of etiquette and a lot of life hacks on Women 101.
He was very smooth. No brutishness. No, he wasn't crass. It wasn't ayo, mama. Like, he was very smooth.
Yeah. So in general, just how his whole setup was, how the crib was nice and clean, how he just, you know, made sure like you smell nice, make sure you dress nice, make sure, you know, just how he carried himself. He always, you know, but he also had a team, you know, like this dude was a womanizer. He just constantly just had all the fly chicks, but never found that one. He wasn't full. And we actually talked about this the last time I was on, about guys not, you know, having that fullness and constantly searching for something. And he actually meets this woman. Well, he doesn't meet her till later, but actually realizes, you know, that she's the one. But he's chasing just different type of women and runs into his match. And I think it normally happens like that for guys. I mean, you know, like men in general could just run it out till they like 46, 48. They can lose their hair and they still feel the type of swag to reverse, go add a beard.
Or why, though?
Whatever it may be.
Do you have an answer for that? I know you don't have an answer for that.
It's like playing a game. Mm-hmm. It's like seeing if you still got it, you know, going out there to hoop, see if you can still get a 20, even though you old and everybody, you know, you in the way, but you just want to show you still got it. And I think that's the whole point. But for some, like if you can win the game of life early and find that great find, and have kids and tap all the way out, then I think that's the real win. But you know, it's cats in the club still 45.
Yes,
you know,
there
Lord, I don't try to put no age on clubbing. But I do feel the club is for people who like to have a good time and dance. But if you out there just kind of hawking and looking for prey, sit your ass down.
I'm in full agreement of that statement. What about you, Karin? What was your discovery point for Boomerang and why is it important to you?
I mean, like Trey, it was always there being younger, but it wasn't until I got older did I start really like sitting down, taking notes. Appreciate what twofold. One is, I make this argument all the time. People laugh at that. I think Robin Givens in Boomerang as Jacqueline Brewer is like the finest moment I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. But also, he had this point in the movie. I think Gerard said, no, they were going back and forth. He told Gerard he was looking for perfection. And he was like, even his feet, like, you're not fucking her feet, man, that scene. Right. But if you actually think about it, it made sense. Because if you paid attention to everything in Marcus's life, it was perfection. From the way he carried himself, to he dressed, to his home decor, to how the secret to my salmon is rosemary butter sauce, and how he cooked, to how good he was at his job. Like, he was the best in the world at what he did. So he had this air of expectation for himself and everything in his world. Like, he was trying to get his boys to do better, if you really pay attention to some of the stuff he was doing. So him having the same expectations for a woman, like, actually made sense.
Now, but was it perfection based on... But wasn't it perfection based on kind of like superficial standards?
No. He pointed out to his friends were. But if you think about Jacqueline was the one who first rocked his world, it was because she was the female Marcus. She was the best in the world at her job. She was his boss. She was put together. She was fine. She could dress. She was him. And he had never met him. That's why he went head over heels. And she rocked his world and was having him sucking his thumb and called his mama. And then, like, he finally met a female Marcus Graham, and he just didn't know what to do with it. And if you pay attention, she had met the male Jacqueline Boyer, because she basically like, this is why I don't date men, I date. You can kind of feel like she'd
been through this before.
She had been through it. That's why she was so war ready. He wasn't. And that's why I always, to this day, feel like Marcus and Jacqueline would have been a better couple than Marcus and Angela if Marcus just would have got rid of his ego and figured it out.
But Jacqueline was kind of a horrible person.
How? Why?
Well, what did she do that was horrible? Okay, maybe horrible is a strong word, but she definitely was, like, she was a great executive, but let's think about it. She wasn't necessarily a good friend to Angela.
Angela was her employee.
Okay, that's fair. But Jacqueline just seemed very, okay, maybe not a horrible person, but there was never a moment for her where she was or showed herself to be emotionally invested in Marcus. Like, even in terms of, like, their interest in each other, when Marcus wasn't as confident, when he wasn't showing the same swag, she was like, all right, whatever. But when he was winning again, all of a sudden she's like,
that made perfect sense.
Yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't make sense, but I'm saying that that's not the signals for a relationship that's gonna work.
But that's what women do to men, they in relationships. Y'all do that. Like, let a dude stop having his job and get fat and get lazy and stop doing the stuff he used to do to get you. You will stop being as emotionally open as you were before.
But the reason that Marcus did all those things was because she dumped him in the first place.
No, but he did all those things to also get her. He went over and board. He was cooking. He was inviting her over.
No, but when he lost his step professionally and, like, that Mark Graham-ness kind of fell off a little bit, it was because Jacqueline played him, and that made him lose, like, shake his confidence. So once another woman built him back up, then she was like, okay, now I'm back interested. I know women who do that, but usually it's not women who actually are interested in the man. They're interested in the persona. And I think that was the difference between Jacqueline and Angela, is that with Angela, Marcus actually had a partnership and somebody that he could be friends with Jacqueline, it was always going to have to be, what's your schedule? I have this meeting. I have this flight. And it was always going to have to be very about keeping up the appearance. Like, I don't think that Marcus ever would have been able to just let his guard down with Jacqueline in a real way.
I totally disagree. Because, like, she told him from jump, don't do this. This is why it shouldn't work. This is the way I am. And he still tried. And if you remember the conversation after Stranger stormed out, she was like, how about you take a minute and think about this, get yourself together, you and your feelings, and come back and we can keep this rocking. And he got super emotional and his ego.
But that's why I said he couldn't be vulnerable with her. She wasn't interested. I guess what I'm saying is that Jacqueline was never interested in being in a relationship with Marcus. She was interested in having a ongoing, like, friends with benefits or employees with benefits situation with Marcus.
I think that had an expiration date.
That would graduate to relationship?
Yeah, I just think...
What do you think, Trey?
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
Do you think that Marcus and Jacqueline ever would have moved into a real relationship phase had they not had the blow up outside the metronome, which is no longer the metronome? And I don't know if it was the metronome then, but I know it is the metronome.
Yeah, I do.
You do.
I do. Yeah, because guys, we do dumb stuff, and we.
I don't think she was checking for him like
risk.
That.
I definitely think that he would have took that risk. It would have been more of a brag than anything, and then mm-hmm. she would have ate his. She would have ripped his heart a lot, like into pieces.
Well, she already did that. I mean, that's the thing. I think that.
Well, I'm just saying, like, it would have been a consistent thing.
Didn't rip his heart to pieces.
Yeah, she did. His heart was ripped to pieces.
What did she actually do to him? Think about it.
Reject him?
No, she didn't. He was wilding in the restaurant. And she was like, chill out.
That was a build up from, I can't believe I'm defending the man on the side, but that was a build up from every time he tried to get closer to her and have some intimacy. Like he's trying to hug up on her in the office. She's like, okay, I thought we weren't doing that.
He was her subordinate.
He made plans for them to go out on a date.
She missed the flight. She had a late meeting.
Didn't call him. And then she left $200
on
the table.
There was no plane. On the plane, Marcus. That was the line. This movie.
This movie, but you also know that those are lines that people give when they actually didn't care enough to make sure you knew what the fuck was going on. They're just going to tell you some shit.
It was 1992. How many ways of contacting him did she actually have?
She could have called him before she got on the plane.
Look, she showed up. And lingerie with $200 and rock this
because
world.
All she wanted to do was fuck. Because she had no interest in him. Even when she was talking to Angela about him, she was like, the rumors are true. See, this is my point. Marcus and Jacqueline would have never been a relationship because, much like when roles are reversed, for her, Marcus was a conquest. Marcus had a reputation, a sterling reputation, for how he was in bed, for how he wines and dines and romances and whatever. And that was what she was looking for. Jacqueline's partner in her mind probably was probably an even bigger fish, like an older executive in finance or some shit like that, who was pulling in even more money than she was. Not Marcus, who was a subordinate to her. But I wanna bring this up before we get more into it because so, Boomerang is now a TV series on BET.
Wait, I gotta do a wardrobe change because I'm hot. Y'all keep going.
Oh, Lord Jesus. It just... Do you really? Okay. Oh, my God. This is hilarious. Trey, I know you didn't watch it, but to explain mm-hmm. to the audience. So, Boomerang turned into a TV series that was basically about the kids from... The kids as a product of the Boomerang characters. So... Angela, Jacqueline, and Marcus's kids took over. Marcus now had his own firm, the Graham firm or the Graham agency. And Jacqueline's son and Marcus's daughter both worked there. Huh?
Bryce and Simone.
Both worked there. And we never actually saw Marcus, but Halle Berry was one of the producers on the show, so there was some expectation of, like, a continuation of canon. And my challenge with it was the show was clearly supposed to exist in the same universe as the original Boomerang. They made mad connections back to the movie. They made strange tie-ins. They referenced things that happened in the movie. They referenced things from...
Sound effects.
Yeah, they referenced things from the original character's points of view. But then, at the end of the season, because this was in the midst of the Me Too movement, a whole bunch of sexual harassment allegations were levied against Marcus. And then Simone is having this whole reckoning. Like, he even harassed my mom when I think about it. And they closed the Graham agency. This pissed me the fuck off. Let me tell you why. To our whole point of what we were just talking about, and to the whole point of the movie, Marcus was a dog, but he never threatened anybody's job. Like, if anything, he slept with Lady Eloise because she led him to believe that's what he needs to do promotion, right? Then he was carrying on an affair with his superior in the office. Then he has talent sexually harass him and show him her wet ass pussy at dinner. Like, again, role reversal. Like, the whole point of the movie was supposed to be women showing that women sometimes could be in the more predatory dominant roles in terms of the dynamic between men and women. So my thing was, why would you create a show and intentionally tie it back to the movie in such in so many multi-layered ways just to then destroy the movie canon? Like, did you watch it, Karin?
Yeah, I've watched every episode of both seasons. I'm waiting for season 3.
I watched some of season 2, but not really.
But no, it made sense to me.
Because
when that episode happened, I immediately thought of like the first 5 minutes of the movie when he
with the casting call.
The casting call when he has to put back lunch with his boys, and I was just like, yeah, he definitely was smashing the models. And
but smashing doesn't mean harassing.
It doesn't. But the sticky part about Me Too, which gets a lot of people in trouble, even if they do something wrong or if they don't, is the power is at the center of it. He had power. He was giving up jobs. Like, they made that comment in the series about, look, this is a picture of your dad with, like, all the Laker girls in the pool.
Right.
Like, he had enough power to make things happen. Now, like,
but in terms of the actual movie that we saw, what we saw was other people leveraging their power against him. Like, we actually saw him being harassed.
Yeah.
Right.
I think they were playing with the idea that he might have, and I don't think that idea that he may have is too far-fetched.
I don't think it's too far-fetched, but I just think I think it's the antithesis of the actual plot line of the movie. Because the movie was literally about Marcus getting it flipped on him. So it just hurt my feelings because I'm like, if this is a new generation who's discovering Boomerang through this show, now when they go back and watch the movie, it's going to be colored through the lens of Marcus Graham was harassing him. That makes sense.
But at the same point, they also in the series touched on how like Simone's parents, Marcus and Angela, broke up. And how like he cheated on her mom. And that's why they had a terrible relationship. And I was like, that totally makes sense. Like,
that part makes sense.
I never thought Marcus and Angela made sense. I never thought it was going to work.
I think Marcus would have cheated on anybody because that's what Marcus does. But being a dog isn't an attribute, but it is not the same thing as being a harasser.
It is not. Those are two very distinct things.
It's a distinct thing.
There's a difference between crossing the line and just doing stuff women do not like because you don't do what they necessarily want.
Or because you're not treating them well, but that's not the same thing as being a harasser.
Correct. Yeah, two totally different things, and I'm happy like those lines are being blurred like they were a couple years ago in terms of allegations. But like, yeah, I never thought that every time I watch that movie, and I watch it a lot, more and more I'm just like, this relationship was never going to last. It never made sense to me. I will always go to the grave thinking that if there ever was a sequel to Boomerang, and if it was him and Angela, I mean, him and Jacqueline, people would have been like, oh, I get it now. Yeah, this does work.
All right, we're going to come back to that. All right, one of the people I forgot to mention when I was talking about the characters in the movie was John Witherspoon.
Oh.
And this was the origin of John Witherspoon's Pops character that he then went on to
So
one of the things I love about Boomerang is that it's one of the movies, I feel like Boomerang and The Color Purple and Friday have contributed more to Black lexicon than any other three movies in existence. So like whether you've watched Boomerang or not, you know Strange, you know you got to coordinate, you know.
Oh, you're missing one.
I'm not finished. Okay, but what else? You add on.
The 5 heartbeats.
Oh, yeah, and the 5 heartbeats. You're right. The 5 heartbeats, too. Trey, your favorite, like, moments from Boomerang, lines from Boomerang, whatever, that still continue, that you reference, and Coming to America, that continue, that you reference, that you use today?
It has to be, you got to coordinate. Anytime I got something that's like, because I hate to match.
Okay.
That's one thing. Like, I'm matching the type of person.
Matching and coordinating are not the same.
Yeah. So my whole thing is when you rarely catch me matching.
Right.
My friend be like, it's Nate Jones too. Shout out to Nate Jones. He be like, you got to coordinate. And he always pull out that meme in the group chat. So it's always funny if he feel like I'm just doing the most.
Right.
With whatever I'm matching with. Whether it's like an orange hat and I got on all these other colors and my sneakers are orange. He can be like, oh, look at that boy over there coordinating. You know, but it was so many other lines. After buff. Like, it just, I mean, you could just pull from that movie. I'm going to actually watch it after we finish.
It's so good. I think there are probably people out there who stay strong and don't even know where the fuck that shit came from. You've never seen it.
It's just like Friday with the By Felicia.
With By Felicia, exactly.
It's such a pivotal, you know, movie to our culture and a lot of stuff. Like, you know, I think where the rappers or whoever uses it, you know, it just kind of falls upon younger ears and they just never find it.
We just adopt it. I do it with Martin stuff too, with like your shit is coming out.
Get him together, please.
school him, please. I'm trying to think. What's yours, Karin?
I can do like the whole movie practically by heart, but my favorites, there's a tie between It's Tiki to My Sam and it's the Rosemary Butter Sauce. There is Marcus.
Right.
Marcus, darling. and the whole, what I consider to this day, the best scene in movie history, because I think Boomerang is the best movie in cinematic history. The Angela scene of the whole love should have brought your ass home last night. From the time he walks in the kitchen and opens the refrigerator to get the orange juice to the time she slaps him.
And he'd be like, you know, but he was so arrogant, you know, I just had some shit. I just had some shit on my mind. That just
I
needed,
walk.
Just had to clear my mind and some shit, you know, I was
moment,
tripping.
The things that he came out that I didn't even know was there.
I was tripping. Yeah. In the robe and the whole
and,
shit.
Like, they nailed, like, every nuance, every, the body language, the inflections in the voice, like, because that was the exact way Angela would try to pop off and try to really go off, and it still came off as delicate compared to how you think Jacqueline would have went off if it was her. It would have been a totally different scene. And it just made so much sense for him. Like, he didn't lie to her, but the way he was even trying to smooth it out, like, some things just happened, you know, one thing, and it was just like, nah, fam, you know what you did.
Right.
Like, what's up? I appreciate you for not lying to her.
And, but he was halfway being condescending with it, too, though. Like, I mean, you know.
She even says, I'm a better person because of you. Like,
yeah, that's, oh, God. Oh, my God. He's lucky he didn't get shot. Oh, shit. I just thought of one and I missed it again. Well, whatever. It'll come back to me. Let's talk about the feet thing for a second. So I do think that Boomerang. So I, you know, I'm older than y'all, obviously, but there was a whole, I think Boomerang was the beginning of, I don't remember anybody focusing on my feet before Boomerang came out. Granted, I was in high school when Boomerang came out, but all of a sudden everybody wanted to know if you had corns, if you had hammer time in your toes. And then that led to,
niggas critiquing
your pedicures to this day. Like, niggas zooming. I know people have always had foot fetishes, but people like zoom in on the pedicures and all these other things. Meanwhile, y'all's feet be looking horrid. But anyway.
Not mine.
I'm cooked.
I'm an ex-athlete. I've broken everything, got and tore everything. Yeah, it's over. I ain't trying to be the tricky one to be judging like that.
Right.
You'll catch me with mostly socks on.
I think Meringue is the beginning of beyond foot fetishism, making, like, actually kind of normalizing a certain amount of mild foot fetishism with black men and the whole idea of pretty feet. Y'all might be too young to comment on that, but I believe that.
I know women who are like, look, after that movie is when I had to start getting pedicures, because they were just like, before that, you was just cool. And it was like, after that movie, there was a certain level you had to keep your feet at, because the attention was just like, nah, you can't show up looking like Lila Rashawn. Like, you can't. And her feet were just terrible. Like, I felt them. Like, her feet were terrible.
I'm sure that wasn't really Lila Rashawn's feet.
No, they weren't really. They were terrible.
Oh, man. And I also, I'm trying to think what else that came out of Boomerang. Definitely that. I don't know. I guess my wonder is, you know, both of you really did idolize Marcus, his game, how he moved. But did either of you learn from his journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, me personally, I'm 35. I'm not trying to play the long game.
Right.
I mean, I don't really put a highlight on age as far as when to like settle down.
Right.
But I do feel you know, in general, you ain't gonna push too many good women away. Like that's just one thing that you gotta know. And obviously we got a rule is like, once your hair leave, boy, you better find somebody that's going to love you while you got that George Jefferson.
But you know why that's terrible is because, like, there is, it's kind of awful, though, the thought that, like, I'm going to just be out here until my hair is gone. And then once I'm past my prime, let me go find somebody 10 years younger than me who's still in their prime.
and make her suffer, right?
Yeah.
But also, not to jump back, Naima, I found quotes. Right now, I wanted to read them all.
Yes, please.
Okay. And I want y'all to guess. This is we're going to play a game.
Oh, it's okay. Easy.
All right. And you guess the character. Don't be pussy whipped with whip that pussy.
That's John Witherspoon.
Okay.
Yep.
Some motherfuckers don't know when a good thing is standing right in front of them.
Oh, Tisha Campbell.
The Tisha Campbell.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead and leap your black ass off the ledge. Fuck it.
All right. You want to come over for a cup of coffee? Not even Jesus was pouring it.
That's also Tisha and Marcus. Yeah.
Okay. What do you know about love? What could you possibly know about love? You know, I'm sick and I'm tired of men using love as if some disease you just catch. Love should have brought your ass home last night.
Angela.
Hey, you're not getting serious on me, are you? What are you talking about? Am I getting serious? What is that? You know, do you want this to grow into a relationship? Where we're together all the time? God, stuff like that. Are you?
Jacqueline
Breuer.
Yeah.
Y'all good.
No, I mean, that's how many times... Well, first of all, that's how many times I've watched the movie. But also, yeah, it's... But that's the thing. Like,
you
even
forgot one of the best ones.
Even the small characters like Tisha, you only saw her, what, 3 times?
Yes.
But she still made an impact. When she was like, mm-hmm. You about what? My size, my height, my weight? Doggy style. Exactly. Dogs. But what was the best one?
One of the best ones that people forget about is, damn, Marcus, first the fat boys break up, now this. It ain't nothing to believe in no more.
When from Chris Rock.
When he walked into the building sad.
Yeah. First the fat boys break up, and which then Jay flipped into the girls, first, girls, girls verse. Yeah. When we were talking about references and where people get it from.
Like, Chris Rock has like 45 seconds of screen time in that movie. And like nails all 45.
Nail one of them. And then he was like, what you, a week? Marcus, not you. God bless young Chris Rock, Pookie Rock. That was when he was Pookie. So the soundtrack, right? One of the most enduring things about Boomerang, even if the movie wasn't a box office smash, the soundtrack was highly successful. So you got the introduction of Toni Braxton. Like, imagine coming out the gate as a brand new artist, your first work out, you got 3 smashes, fucking smashes.
And one was given to you because a legend turned it down.
I think all 3 of them were. I don't think it was just Love Should Have Brought You Home. I think all of them, and I feel like people know this by now, but they were actually written for Anita Baker. Anita was pregnant, and she didn't want to lay him down. They had recently signed Tony. And, you know, Tony's in the same vocal range as Anita, so they gave them to her. But there were three Tony songs. So it was Love Should Have Brought You Home, and it was Give You My Heart. Wait, was there a third one on there?
It was just those two.
It was those two. But still, both of them were singles off the soundtrack. And then you had PM Dawn, Die Without You. And
hard. That and piano chord, hard.
So hard. You had...
The great
Johnny Gill. You had Johnny Gill, There You Go, which I think is Johnny's
best
like,
song.
One of his best songs. Which one's Grace Jones? 7 Day Weekend?
Yeah.
Seven Day Weekend, Hot Sex on a Platter.
Fit on the soundtrack, but it's a great song.
It doesn't really fit on the soundtrack
at all.
It's
a great end, though.
Yeah, it doesn't.
So
but
that
it
make
doesn't.
You start a whole nother album. Like if that come on, then you can just go put on a whole other album.
You can make it a transitional piece.
Let me go find my New Jack Swing.
The thing about how sex as a platter on a platter that's interesting to me is that it's really indicative of the regional differences in music back then to me, because when the album first came out, I didn't get it. I didn't get Hot Sex on a Platter at all. But everybody I knew in the city loved it. And still. And I like it more now. But, like, people from New York love Hot Sex on a Platter. And I was just like,
End of the Road.
Yeah, End of the Road.
On the Keith Washington joint either, because that one was cold, too.
What Keith Washington song on there?
Tonight is Right.
Oh, yeah. And who else are we forgetting? We're forgetting somebody else. Oh,
PM Dawn.
I said Die Without You. The Total Reversal of the Dog song. Who was that? That was
LaFace Cartel. Was that
LaFace Cartel with Damian Dame? I think. Okay. I think that's what they were called. And there was
Feels Like Heaven.
Oh, that was after Six, right?
No, yeah. No, Kenny Vaughn.
But it sounded like after Six.
Yeah.
And I think that was it. But pound for pound, one of the best R&B artists. I mean, one of the best R&B soundtracks. Now, the 90s was the golden R&B soundtrack era. Was the golden black movie era. Movie soundtrack era, because it was the golden black movie era. Which Boomerang was one of the... I would say officially kicked off with House Party or Strictly Business, going into House Party, going into Boomerang. Going into New Jack, going into Boomerang.
Love Jones.
That was like the beginning. And then, well, Love Jones was years later. But I'm talking about like those first movies they kicked it off. Do you guys own, people don't own soundtracks anymore. You don't own albums anymore. I was about to say, do y'all own the soundtrack? But that's an outdated question.
I don't think I had ever heard this. Like, personally, I didn't own it or anything. Plus, I was a kid.
Right.
I'm not supposed to have it. But before we started this, I listened to it. And I mentioned that.
You thought some of the songs didn't get cleared.
Yeah, because they're kind of shaded out. Like, I Die Without You, End of the Road is not on Apple. Everything else was on here. And I was listening
to it. End of the Road is not on Apple Music?
Nope. It's not. Well, it's not on this soundtrack. It's great. It's, like, pretty
interesting.
Much, you can't click it and play it. But overall, like, I mean,
didn't expect.
It was good. I mean, some of these songs that were kind of familiar, and then the other ones was like, okay, I have to watch the movie to kind of catch it. And, like, the dope thing about the soundtracks, they were always played. Like, I would watch a bunch of 90s movies and listen to the songs, and that would inspire me to even go buy it even more.
Well, soundtracks were a big part of the marketing plan back then. Like, it was a real marriage between the movies and going to get the music, for sure.
I missed that. They need to bring that back.
I wish they would bring that. Streaming killed the soundtrack, though, because it's like you can just put together a playlist what you need that for. But yeah, I will say, like, I think the music, I mentioned this before. So when they were doing the soundtrack, what they were chasing was the success of the New Jack Swing soundtrack. I mean, the New Jack City soundtrack, because it was massive. And that's also when I think of the best soundtracks of the 90s. And they called Babyface in L.A., and Babyface in L.A. sat on set to watch everything come together so that they could figure out placement. Because I think the music placement is also, like, the soundtrack is one thing. The placement...
Perfect.
The placement is like when Jacqueline said, all right, goodbye then, Marcus Graham. And all of a sudden, the lights of the Empire State Building go off and Die Without You comes on. And then the lights of the Empire State Building don't come back on until he hugs it out with his boys, which I love. I love that little detail. Yeah. I think that's beautiful. And even just the placement of There You Go with the scene with Jacqueline in. I just thought that
how
all of it.
She popped up on him in the lingerie and it hit the Johnny Gill note.
I thought that all of it was fantastic. The other thing is that I just think that, and you guys are both, you know, you're creatives in your own right. What do you think are the reasons that movie still holds up today? Because there's very little about that movie that doesn't hold up.
I mean, it has everything, especially just from a black person's point of view. Like, you had the guy that all guys want to be like and all the women want to sleep with. You had the female version of it in Jacqueline, and all the dudes wanted her, and all the women, even in the office, in that one scene when Marcus came in, they wanted to be like Jacqueline.
Let's pause. But I want to pause for a second. And sorry, I meant to bring this up earlier. today, does it seem conceivable that if you put Robin Givens and Halle Berry in the same movie, that Robin Givens is considered the siren over Halle Berry?
Right now, no, not in 2020.
Right. Like, I think about that.
2020, like, a little different because, you know, for one, they would have just tried the overall package versus, you know, during that time, it was a little different too. Like, even just the attraction to certain body types and everything, you know?
Yeah. Like, so, it's, but Robin was like that girl at the time, like for real.
Yeah, for sure. Popular was.
Right, right. Well, I'm sorry. So go ahead. So you say you had the girl and Jacqueline that like everybody wanted to get at.
You had the OG Cougar and Erdin Kitt, who my funny part I always laugh at, and I was watching this Saturday with some friends, and I was like, I never understood why Marcus didn't want to smash Lady Eloise, because I'm like, it looked good as hell. I was like, I would have been all so in funny. That. You have the friendship with these boys. You got Pops being like, this your boozy son with all that private school making them all sadiddy.
Right.
You got the crazy ass ex in Tisha. You have everything that's in part of most people's life. Like, you see the wins with Marcus, you see the losses, you see the small comedy and the ingenious of the stuff Marcus did. Like, the thing I love about Marcus Graham the most that he taught me, and Trey was talking about the life lessons earlier, was that, like, he taught me how to actually pay attention to women. And that was the thing that blew. I was like, oh shit, like, this nigga's right. Like, pay attention to certain stuff. Cause, like, Trey was talking about how, like, how it was a game sometimes with men and women. Usually the dudes who win are the, it's like sports, study the most, watch the most game field, know your opponent. Marcus Graham won more than Tyler and his boys because he studied women. Like, he actually liked women. He liked their presence. He liked how they presented. He liked talking to them. It wasn't just sleeping
he
with
did,
all the time.
But it was still a conquest. It was still a means to an end for him. I think that's the
but
great.
But he still liked them, though.
Right. Like, but that's a great but sad thing about Marcus. Like, Marcus really fucked with women. He appreciated women, the art form of women, and all the intricacies and all the differences in every type of woman. But that should have made him a dynamic partner, but he was using it instead to fuck.
Yeah. But even to that point, we had never seen a dude that smooth with his stuff together that actually liked women to, like, nah, let me show you how to actually win with them. And it was like, and you watch it older, and you're like, oh, let me get the crib like this. Let me get the salmon. Like, let me have cook. 3 bottles of champagne.
That's game that niggas need to pay attention to. Cook. You can cook.
And just have champagne on deck all the time, because she always gonna want some Prosecco, bro. Always. She's never gonna say no. And if you spend the night, bam, you got mimosas. Like, it was little stuff like that. And I was just like, okay, I gotta get my shit together. Okay, I see how this go. Let me light these candles.
Trey, for you, what are the enduring qualities of Boomerang? Why is it so good even now, 30 years later?
Because that advice still holds up. That's what it is. The advice still holds up when you really think about it. I mean, if you ain't never, you know, if you ain't never been on the in the winner's circle, you know, I would say sit up in class with no pad.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, also, you got humor out of it too, man. And it's rare black humor. I mean, with all black casts and you know, early Chris Rock, if you're into that, and Martin Lawrence, you know what I mean? Like, you could go down the line, man. Like, it gave you everything that you possibly wanted out of it. And then, you know, it kind of has a life hack about, you know, if you're not playing your cards right, you can let something slip away.
Yeah. See,
Trey said it the nice way. What he was trying to say was, the dude pulled Erdin Kitt, Lila Rashawn, Halle Berry, and Robin Givens in a 2-hour film. If you not gonna listen to him, what you doing?
Okay, so I'm going to be the person who just brings it from a purely creative standpoint. There was a time when I was studying the screenplays from different classic black ensemble films. This is one of the best ones. The First Best Man is another one. It's so well written. It's such great storytelling, and every character adds something to the movie. And it's really easy to just have motherfuckers in the movie just to be there. Every character really brings something to this movie. And even in the way they play off of Marcus and Jacqueline is outstanding. And like I said before at the top, just what I really do appreciate about Eddie in this movie and in Harlem Nights is the multi-generationalism, like the fact that you put Eartha in here, the fact that you put Jeffrey Holder in here, the fact that you brought John Witherspoon, like House Party plus this, and that might have been a Hudlin call more than because the Hudlin brothers did House Party. That might have been the Hudlins more than it was Eddie, but those two things started that second wave of John Witherspoon's career, you know. Oh. A whole second act, like at
Ben Kane
50.
Wayans brothers.
Yeah, at like 50. To me, it's those elements as well of just that fullness of Black representation, everybody from the outrageous ass Grace to, you know, Holly and David Allen Greer, who in this case were supposed to be squares. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's what I appreciated. And again, such a classic narrative that there is really very little you'd have to adjust if you wanted to reboot that movie today.
I'm happy you said square, because we can finally be honest. Angela was lame as hell. Like, she was
supposed to be the good girl. But she was supposed to be the good girl. And I actually kind of hate the good girl versus vampy archetype playoff with nothing in the middle. But she was supposed to be the quote-unquote,
she was supposed to be the good girl. We don't know that.
We know that Lila Rochon had a dog and had a whole bunch of teddy bears on her bed. That's what that movie did teach me, that after a certain age, you don't put no fucking stuffed animals on your bed. I never did that shit.
Have you ever told a man, go star for Marcus, dinner was yummy?
Oh, my God. All right, guys. I want to thank you for the Boomerang recap. We're running late on time. So if you were to suggest, in addition to Boomerang, and again, I know that you guys were younger at the time, just to finish it off, what, in addition to Boomerang, what would round out like your other top, if you had to name top three soundtracks from the 90s, what else would you include in here?
I'm throwing Love Jones in there for one.
Yes.
And I'm throwing a soundtrack in there that we sleep on and forget about sometimes.
You about to say Have Plenty.
Soul Food.
See, I don't love Soul Food soundtrack like that. So
I hate a song from Mama, that's why. But you know me well enough to know like Have Plenty is my sleeper one.
Yeah, I figured that. Trey, what's yours?
I'm going to say Waiting to Exhale.
Okay. Good choice.
And then
Trey listening to the feminist anthems. I dig it.
I'm gonna go to Bodyguard.
Okay. Y'all gave me no rap choices. I'm surprised. Okay.
Well, you know what? I flip it on that one. I'll go Above the Rim because you said three.
Okay. Yeah, Above the Rim. Was really one of the best soundtracks of all time.
With my favorite Tupac song on there, That's not on there.
The favorite Tupac song that's on there that's not actually on there.
You can't find Pain anywhere except for YouTube.
Literally nowhere. I think it was a single or some shit. I don't know. I'm gonna go with, or it was on a bonus version, but you can't find it.
I go to YouTube.
I'm gonna go with So, in addition to Boomerang, shit, I should have given you guys five because three is hard. I'm torn between adding New Jack City and Juice as number two, but I got to include Love Jones in there as well because it also is one of my favorite soundtracks of all time, period. We might have to do another show just to do a soundtrack ranking at some point. All right, guys, thank you. I want to encourage you all who are listening, if you have never watched Boomerang, watch it. Watch it with some friends. Like these two, like Karin said, he did rewatching it.
Red wine.
Get you some snacks. Get you some wine. And like, watch it in fun. Because first of all, it's a fun movie. It really is a great ensemble. Even about like the brotherhood between the three guys. And like I said, also just seeing like some middle class black professionals with it, even without that being centered, like they don't point out we're doing XYZ as black people. Like it's just a given. That's the other thing I loved about it. Like all that dope black shit was just given. It wasn't explained. It wasn't highlighted. It wasn't abnormal. It was just there. And y'all understand what I mean when you watch it, but shout us out to Boomerang. It really is one of my favorite movies.
You got
of all time.
Two black people, a black man and a black woman who have penthouse condos
next door to each other.
Next to each other.
With patios and
with
views.
With patios.
I love it. I love it. And I never questioned why or how or any of that shit. I was just like, fuck it.
I always wondered what she did, though. I was like, what she do?
Like banging. Now, though, now, I don't know how old they were supposed to be. That's the one thing. Because now, at my big age, even though it was the 90s, I'm still like, your salary wouldn't have been that much money. Or maybe it would have been. I don't know. Now I'm at an age where I actually look at stuff and do math in my head. But back then, it was just dope. Back then, it was just dope. All right, y'all. Thank you. Thank you guys for listening. As always, subscribe, rate, comment, holla at us, all that good shit. Trey, thank you for being with us. Everybody check out Trey Growing Up the Same with Jamal Crawford this week. Anything else anybody has to say to the people, Karin? Karin, thank you for your suit and your efforts. Gold star for Karin.
I got too hot. I had to come back to this t-shirt. Listen. Right. But always, cognac for Kamala. Mm-hmm. And as always,
do not give your money to that white man. Do not give your money to Sean King, who I refuse to call that man. And Trey, get well, boo.
Thank you so much.
I might be telling your business. Sorry.
No, you're good. It was on the internet.
It was on the internet, yeah. Yeah, we wishing you a speedy recovery. You got to take care. You know,
hopefully I can come back on here.
Oh, you are always welcome here. You have an open door pass to come here anytime. But yeah, you know.
Anybody who understands Trey Songz last time, okay, is welcome back.
We do need to have a deep conversation about those songs. Matter of fact, Karin has an idea about us going through songs and talking about exactly where the person in the song made a wrong choice. So maybe we need to, bring you back.
Run it back. I'll keep the schedule clear for you guys.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.